So I now officially am taking care of five kids.
That's five too
I've
many.
got, this is always a test, Mason, Hayden, Sydney, and Avery, 9, 11, 14, and 17. And we just added my grandma Schultz, great grandma Schultz, who's 104, is downstairs. My parents dropped her off so they could go to a play that my niece
My
is in
parents dropped.
Cincinnati. And so she's going to stay and eat dinner with us. And then I'm going to take her back to my parents' house and spend the night there to make sure she's all good. But it was hilarious talking to my dad. He's like, we've got detailed written instructions of everything how to do, and you're gonna have to remind her to do stuff. And like, you're gonna have to tell her, you're like, you need to put on your non-slip socks before you go to bed. And she's gonna nod, but then she's not gonna do it. And I was like, Dad, you are truly describing my everyday life. It's just another kid.
Just treat her like a child.
Yeah.
104
He's
years old.
just sweeter
104.
and funnier than my four kids. But
Has some more
yeah,
stories.
104. Her sister is 103 as well.
This is great. Is this
Do they
Oakley
get around
genetics?
okay? Yeah. Shockingly, they do. I mean,
Shockingly.
she goes for
Wow.
walks around the block and she has to stop like every five houses to catch her breath, but she
That's
still
pretty
walks
good.
around. Yeah.
Every five houses. How big are the lots?
I want to be her.
I want to be here too. 104.
And
That's
then my grandfather, who married her, he passed away, gosh, probably 12 years ago. But he was painting his house when I think he was 92 or 93, fell off a three-story ladder, broke his back, but survived, and then lived for like another 2 years. It was so like that side of the family has great genes. We're gonna be doing many, many more years of market-proof marketing. If that has any indication,
that's true.
that's really cool.
That is wild. Yeah, I'm good, not going on a three-story ladder. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm gonna feel like I'm 104 after I do a run this weekend. So,
That might be the trick. You got to go on the ladder. Use it or lose it is what I think we're learning here. There you
use
go.
it or lose it. And will humans be selling me homes when I'm 104?
We won't
Yes.
be leaving homes. We'll be little pods, little concrete pods. That's
We'll
it.
have VR
Fake
pods. We'll
world.
be living in the.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Mars?
All right.
Maybe. Probably not.
Let's get started. Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you, we're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com.
Let's go.
Welcome everyone to Market Proof Marketing, episode 335. I'm Kevin Oakley, and with me today is Andrew Peak and Jesse Suggs.
Hey, everybody.
What a day. So glad to be here.
Let's go back one quick second. How old would you like to live till? Let's just go full morbid to open the show. I always
Jesse,
think
what
about
do you think?
Kimberly Mackey's comment of like, you never know how this podcast is going to open. How long do you want to live?
As long as I'm healthy. Like, I don't want to have to
Yeah.
be uncomfortable.
That's good. I'm here for a good time, not a long time. So whatever that means. That sounds morbid. Yeah, quality of life. Quality of life. I always told Lindsay.
So
So
quality
here's
over
morbid.
quantity?
Yeah, for
That.
sure. Like if I start losing my mind, which I think could happen sooner rather than later, as far as looking at my genes, some brain stuff definitely could happen. Like Lindsay, just take me out back. Like just
No.
take me out back. Like I'm like a dog. Find a hole in the ground. Like we're good. Like don't put up with that. Go find someone better. Go find a replacement model.
My
Broken.
mom swears she's going to live to be 101. Like, my mom's not anywhere near 101, but
Okay.
she said, I think my mom's 60. So I'm like, okay, I get a lot more years with you. But I'm like, where did you come up with that? She's like, I don't know. I had a dream one day. It's going to be 101. And she's super healthy. She does all the things. So maybe I'll get lucky enough.
Yeah, we'll see.
I really I wanted to toss that out just as an example of how irrational we are as people. You know, it's like there wasn't a complex analysis. It was like a shortcut of, I mean, as long as I can, as long as I'm good. But like, I just asked you when you want to die. And it took you both
I didn't
like
answer. We didn't answer.
almost no time and almost no real intense thought. Like, I just think it's fascinating how human beings work. You
Yeah.
know?
Like, I think we better, how do you want to die?
You just answer that question faster than you would if I asked you, like, what kind of candy bar would you like?
Yeah, what do you want for dinner?
That's true. Ooh, that's exactly. A bad question.
Where do you want to go for dinner? It's paralyzing. You know, that question. That's funny.
It's paralyzing.
That is funny.
Oh, man.
Hey, we always like to go, I shouldn't show who it is. Never mind. I just got this text live. What is the best AI service for new home sales?
I'm not even sure what that means. Hopefully that person isn't like, well, you're a jerk, Andrew.
Servicing. I think the best AI service that doesn't exist, but this is all it should exist, is it should just give a notification to the sales manager of everything that isn't being done in the CRM. And then when the sales manager ignores it and doesn't hold people accountable, it's just automatically notify the next person hire. Just like
a doomsday device. Like
tattletale.ai, new home tattletale.ai.
I like it.
Company.
You know, it has blackmail, like has everyone's dirty little secrets. None of us here on the podcast have them, but it takes them and finds them. And then it will, like, this will be published on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn in 5 minutes, in 5 hours, whatever it may be. Like, oh, okay. That sounds terrible.
Well, the other reason I say tattletale is one of our builders, their on-site appointment to sale conversion rate went from, I think it was 5% in February to over 50% in April. And they have almost doubled their sales goal for the month. And I'm not the coach. Julie's their coach. And so I've been waiting for this call to happen because they sent us the market proof algorithm ahead of time. And I'm like, son of a gun, I got to know what they're doing. Because interestingly enough, traffic volume, lead volume, ads, you know, they're all adjusted and current, but no dramatic changes. All that's changed is they've doubled their sales goal versus not hitting their sales goal. I said, so when I saw Julie today, I go, Julie, here's my guess, but I hope I'm wrong, is that they just lowered prices, you know, communicated lower prices or some incentive. And she goes, actually, no, they just have a new salesperson who used to be the temporary online salesperson. And I was, so now we're talking about someone who doesn't know to underreport numbers and to ignore customers when they walk in the door yet. They haven't learned those advanced skills.
Spicy.
And so they're following up and they're, you know, the other thing is they've heard all these objections. They know the concerns. They know the questions that customers are going to have. It was not what I was expecting to hear, but also not unheard of either to just say, what changed? Nothing but the sales rep.
There was an online sales story that was the same. They got rid of one online sales specialist, got to train one in, and in a month's time, everything switched. So,
well, now that we've already insulted, like, at least 20% of our audience, Jesse, just continue on, because I don't know what you're going to talk about, but I'm fascinated by your story time topic.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking about this. I thought
you were nice. I thought you were the counterbalance.
I'm going to tell you, this actually came from Mike.
Okay,
is it making sense now? We were on our call this morning and I have like a bunch of different stories and I'm like, which one is going to be the most important for this call, for this podcast? And he said, here's what you should talk about. He said, here's your tagline. It's not slow, you're slow. And I was like, ooh.
That sounds
slow
like
is the bad four letter S word. Like, I'm like, you can say any other four letter S word on a coaching call, but don't tell me it's slow.
Oh yeah.
And so we started kind of talking about it. And it's funny because I just got off of a coaching call where we were talking about this exact same thing. And my story time comes from a builder who is a build on your lot builder. And the manager goes, what's the difference? Like, I'm trying to identify what the difference is. Everybody's getting the same lead opportunity. Everybody, you know, has the same thing going on. And there's four online sales specialists and we're ranking them from highest producing to lowest producing and trying to find a common denominator. And the two at the bottom, they're new. So they don't have quite as much opportunity in the pipeline, but the top two have thousands of leads at their discretion. And the number one said that she loves doing prospecting. And so we started talking about how it's not slow. Your new incoming leads might be slower than you're used to, but your marketing department's already paid for thousands of leads that are already in your system. So if you're slow, that's on you. Like, you've got things that you can be doing And the difference was the number one person, the highest producer, did it consistently and they look forward to it. And the second place had like just hit or miss results because they did hit or miss types of outreach, no strategy, not consistent on the day or the time or what they were doing. And so that was really, really interesting to see. You know, the others just, of course, didn't have the pipeline. And we know that the buyer's like life cycle is longer than a standard production builder, but it's the same with your standard production builders too. And so I went on this call just a second ago, and this online sales specialist goes, yeah, I'll be completely honest. I've never really been one for prospecting. I've only been in the seat for about a year and a half. I didn't need to do it before. It's not a skill that I have. Can we take some time to talk about it? So we came up with this strategy, and she said,
yeah. You came up with a strategy for someone who just doesn't want to do it?
She didn't know how to do it. So that's like kind of discerning, like I've never done it before. Okay. I need to do it. And she goes, I just get analysis paralysis. Like I go to send it. I know I should do it. And then I freeze and I go, I'll come back to this later. My day gets busy, whatever. And she gave me this really cool story. And she said, when she was in high school, she took a photography class, and her professor or her teacher, maybe it was college, said, this half of the class is going to have their whole score based on one photo. At the end of the semester, you give me your one photo, and this half has to send me 100 photos, and yours is going to be graded on those 100 photos. And when they took this as a research study, the people that had 100 photos had significantly more and better photos because they had more reps in doing it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, that's kind of like prospecting, because the more you do prospecting, the better you get at it, and the more you're staying in front of your customers. And so it's just, it's not slow. You're slow. Go get after your leads.
Slow in several different meanings of the word too, I think is what you're talking about. Yeah. Like slow to get the reps in, slow to adapt, slow to just hit send.
Do it.
I like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it too. At what point, this maybe it's a bad question, I would go like, I don't know if this person's cut out for this job.
Mm.
Like in terms of like prospecting, that seems like a very crucial skill.
Yeah,
obviously.
let's shift it away from online sales.
Marketing. Yeah, marketing.
That's like, where I want to go, because I'm done hearing this phrase. If I hear this one more time from someone who, let me set it up and then I'll let you go off on it, Andrew. I'm not really a technical marketer. I don't really love analyzing data and information. I don't really, I'm not good at math. If you're the CMO of a large organization, I think you could say some of those things, but the question is, how do you get there? Like the person who got there, who now is able to be like, I don't really understand all this stuff. That's why I've got a great team. That works because you've got 20 years of experience behind you or whatever. But if you're listening to my voice now, the question is, how are you going to get to that? You are not going to get to that seat from where you're sitting right now, if that's your take on it. Now, Andrew, take it away. I teed it up for you.
Yeah. So it's funny. I want to go like granular in every little thing. Zero math we do in marketing for home building is hard, period. It's not trigonometry. It's not calculus. It's not derivatives and all this weird stuff that we were like tortured. It's barely even algebra, right? Like it's like averages. It's when I'm write like little formulas in Excel, I think Excel is something you need to know how to do. So if you're like, I'm terrified of it, that makes me nervous. As far as like, I don't know if you're the right person for this type of position. Like, cause it's super, super simple. The most I'm doing is like equals this cell divided by this cell. And that gives us the click-through rate. Like really, that's really basic math. My sixth grader is beyond that.
Yeah.
So that's like, I'm not good at sixth grade math is what someone is saying. So I'm like, ooh, that's not a good argument. The other side's like, you should enjoy the technical side, and it's not that technical. Maybe I look at things too relative, like technical is IT, technical is programming. It's understanding that language, which it's a different language. If you're a developer and you're writing in PHP or JavaScript, whatever, like it's a different language they have to learn to be able to type it in. It is using English letters, but like each word means something. So you're learning the language. on our end, that's, we're not doing anything remotely technical. The most we're doing is BigQuery and Google Tag Manager. So I, to me, I'm like, I just hear like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's me sitting down my sixth grade son and he's like, this is really hard. I can't do it. I'm not smart. I'm not capable. I'm like, you just don't want to do it. Like, let's sit here for 10 minutes and do it. That's all it is.
You know, we don't have a giant boardroom here at Do You Convert. We're all remote. We all are in different states. But for the, I don't know, 15 years or so that I worked at places that had boardrooms and we had meetings as senior leadership members, you know what we talk about? There's really only two things that conversations that happen in those rooms. One revolves around staff and personnel. And everything else revolves around numbers. Everything else. And to the extent that marketers have been able to get a proverbial seat at the table, which is another phrase that I'm kind of over, more or less, is it's how much of you've leaned into coming to those conversations with your own sets of data, with your own analysis, and with your own story to tell. And so... yeah. But anyway, I wanted to cross it back over to marketers, but I think there's the Sam Altman quote that's going viral right now is that 95% of all marketers will be unemployed because AI is going to take your job. And I think there's hope that, well, AI is just going to come and help me solve this part of the analysis part that I'm not great at doing. But that would require AI to think, not just predict.
Right. And who's going to, you need to use AI and know the answers, right? So you could do I could be like Carson, he's my youngest, he's my oldest with the math troubles I was just talking about. He could have a calculator in class and still get the answer wrong, right? That's the tool to do the math for him. AI can be like, here's the answer. It's the wrong answer. You just like screwed over everybody because you don't know what you're doing or you're not wanting to learn the math to be able to verify if AI is helping or assisting. But I think there are some people that truly aren't good with numbers, but then usually those people are so far indexed on like communication and talking and connecting with people. They're not in the seat to be like a liability with numbers.
And again, if you're already a senior leader, then you're good. You've made it to the point where you can rely on other team members to fill those gaps for you or to solve those roles. But if you're, you know, early on in your career and you're saying, I'm just avoiding all of that, you're in trouble.
Especially now.
All right, Andrew, what do you got?
Yeah, I got so my Tesla autopilot full self-driving trial expired 2 days ago. That's AI.
I'm
really sad. Like I was like, oh, I'll try it out. Like I got the car. I didn't really know much about the full self-driving. I'm like, I'll mess around with it. And then after like I had it, somehow the trial on it extended like 6 weeks or so. It got better and better and better. It did 3 or 4 updates in the time, I think. And I'm like, man, I'm kind of used to this now. Then it turned off. It's like, subscription expired, da 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 stuff. I'm like, okay, like I'm cool. Like I don't even drive. I'm like 5-10 minutes pretty much anywhere. I got so used to it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is terrible. Like I feel so unsafe driving now. Like I know that seems so absurd because like 99% of other cars on the road are like, you do what you want with it. Versus in full self-driving, like you're like, oh, you're the lights up there. It's gonna start slowing down for you. It's gonna start doing this. Like it drives safe. But then the most recent updates makes it drive like a human. So it's, you know, the Teslas are faster. So then it could, let's get up to the speed limit quickly if there's no one in front of you. Versus before, it was kind of like, oh, it like kind of puts its way up there.
Yeah.
And so you got used to it. I'm like, man, I need this. But what was interesting was their marketing. So that's why I shift over to that. The screen that you're shown when it's in full self-driving, you see all the cars around you and you're like, the trust is there because you're like, there's 40, 50, 60 cars on the screen and they're all moving like this. And then it shows like the turn signals, all the stuff like, like it's looking at more than I can look and think about one time. And then it goes away. I'm like, this car's so dumb now. Like where'd all the other cars go? Like it's not tracking that for me. Like I have
to. So how much do you have to pay for it to turn it back on?
$99 a month. So they did lower it from 200 to 99. So now it's a number where you're like, well,
yeah,
I mean,
that takes away half of your fuel savings a month or like total energy savings away.
And then for us, like we added solar back in January, February, we got our first bill with a full solar month and we only paid the connection fee to the tower company. So that's $30. I'm like, okay, so I could add that back in. And so money's not the, the thing now, like it's free. But I was really surprised. I'm like, man, they really got me, like this trial. And then they dumbed down the car, it felt like. And I got so used to it and trusted it. And like, it never like prevented an accident because I don't drive like a bum, but like just got so used to like it helping like do things for me. Like, man, I kind of need this. Like I want that equivalent to marketing. I don't know what that is yet. The full self-driving assist, because I don't let it take over and I close my eyes. You can't do that. But like it is like it's like a smarter cruise control is how I used to use it. Change lanes for you, all those sorts of things. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll report back next week if I get that in there. But still surprised.
Are you already bought it? Good.
Not yet. Well, I have to like
you bought it.
Mentally you bought it.
Immensely about it. But the thing is, I have to be like, when Lindsay gets in the car next, she's like, did you get that? I'll be like, yeah. And say like, oh, so you signed up for $100 a month on top of your thing? Yeah. That conversation. Not that she's in charge of the finances. She's not a numbers person. So she legit terrible at numbers. She will not be a marketer ever.
You need to say, but this makes me safer. And is my life not worth $99 bucks a month?
Am I not worth $99 a month? Come on now. Come on.
Do you not? I mean, I get it. You want
you don't value number me.
Two. You want the upgraded Andrew Peak, but
yeah,
this is the one that's here with you right now. $99 a month.
So like, well, why didn't I get the Range Rover or the Tesla X? Like, I'm like, she's like, am I not worth that? She'll spin it around on me somehow. Oh man, it's good though.
My story time, I'll keep brief because I already wrote about this, and by the time this goes live, you'll probably see a more in-depth conversation on the networks as well. But it was really just based upon a conversation with a senior sales leader from one of the top 25 builders in the country. And, you know, she's been around a long time, different market cycles. And we were talking about, she's like, well, we need to do one. We either have to get more leads or we have to improve our conversion rates. We got to do one of those two. It was where the conversation landed. And I said, yeah. And the answer is conversion rates. And she's like, I know. I'm like, but then we unpacked why we knew that. It was just one of those things we inherently both came to that conclusion. But the reason is because in the trough, the worst market that I've ever experienced and most people have ever experienced, 2007 to 2010, you couldn't get more leads. It was impossible to create demand. You couldn't even steal demand necessarily from other people very well. So it was all about conversion rates. And it was only when you figured out how to, with all of the five P's of marketing, to get conversion rates that were acceptable, then you went and spent the money to get more people like that. But the ones who just kept running ads and made billboards and TV and were just desperate to create demand, they just accelerated their exit as a business to bankruptcy. I had a couple people push back on this when I talked about it, and they said, well, no, it wasn't conversion rates that saved people. It was, you know, just having better banking relationships, which there is some truth to that. But here's the thing. At the end of the day, yes, banks were aggressively shutting down builders. But at the end of the day, it's because the builders were not a good use of capital compared to the risk. Meaning at the end of the day, it's all about efficiency. If I, as a home building company, require less money to borrow to build a house, can consistently sell it for a higher margin with less expense, then they weren't shut down. And our builder had our main bank get pulled. They had worked with for like 15 years, local bank, and they had to make new relationships, but they did. And we made it through that transition because we were able to say, look, our conversion rates are better than the industry. And we have this pre-sale without fail process. When we launch a new neighborhood, we're selling 8 to 12 to 20 homes in the very first day of sale. We're not behind on our takedown commitments. We're cash flow is good. So what happened, and I'm giving over context here, because is that a lot of builders were overly aggressive, and they don't think they were, but when an impartial third party looked at their numbers and the way their business ran, they said, yeah, we're going to have to ask you to give us all of our loan money back because you're risky, which means they were at some point being too aggressive and too leveraged. They might not have felt like they were being irresponsible, and that's probably even the wrong word, but they were if the bank said, we'd like our money back. Mm. So what we all learned then was conversion is what mattered. That's why online sales became what it is today, is because the online sales process and that position was doubling conversion rates of appointments from walk-in traffic. And everyone said, okay, well, if I'm only going to get 10 leads and I can have those same 10 leads interact with an online salesperson first, get information, get them hooked in, set an appointment, and they convert at double, that's what I need to do. Okay, so trough conversion rates, what mattered. In the best market ever in terms of demand, 2021, people are lined up, they're begging, they're like trying to break into homes that are closed.
Yeah.
We're telling them you have to get pre-qualified, you have to have all of your selections online, you can only buy online, you can only reserve online, don't show up without a check, all that stuff. What does that inherently mean? It means we only care about conversion rates. And the conversion rates are so high, we don't want to run ads to the same degree that we have been. We want to shut down models. We want to put on sales caps. And we're going to tell you that we're not going to talk to you until we're ready to release more homes. So just get used to it. So at both ends of the spectrum, it was all about conversion rates. And then we find ourselves in moments like now where interest rates jumping higher has caused a little bit of a lull. And the smartest builders we work with have all identified it. They say, yep, this is exactly the same pattern as what happened around October of last year when rates really started spiking. And so they're like, oh, this is what's happening. But what's shocking is, and this, I was talking about this earlier with someone else, there's this constant ebb and flow of who's got the reins of budget and priority of what they want and need between sales and marketing leadership. And whenever the market is tougher, marketing gets the reins and more control. And whenever things get better and sales are happening, understandably, CEOs, COOs say, who's bringing the revenue to me? The sales leadership. Okay, sales leaders, you get to make the decisions because you're producing and you're, and so what happens when those, when we get that transition point where the market's transitioning is that sales leadership tends to always say, just get me leads. All I need is more people, which is ironic because that's the exact time that there are fewer people to be had. And instead we should be really focusing on conversion rates. And it ties in perfectly what you were talking about, Jesse, in terms of, you know, it's not slow, you are. And the story that I shared about the new salesperson just popping in and, you know, going from a 5% appointment to sale ratio to 50% plus.
That's insane.
And so we just, I want to try to help everyone listening have that conversation of the two, the peak and the trough. Conversion rates are what matters, which means that's the, what matters all the time. And you should absolutely get more leads when you can, when they're there to be had. But you should always be looking at conversion rate first.
Yeah, I think more leads poorly managed does not equal better results ever. Like whether it's in an influx market where you've got too many people inquiring and you don't know where to delegate your attention to get the hottest people, or you're wanting more leads and you're just funneling crap into the funnel just for the sake of conversions on the top end. Yep. So I totally agree. I don't know. Is this a good segue into our new
marks? Almost the good segue. Okay. I like the little motion. This is Kevin on a segue.
On the segues. Don't try those.
Are they still a thing? Yeah.
Did the guy die or something? The founder? He flew off the cliff? Or is that like some made up SNL skit?
That talk was at the first minute of the show. I think the other interesting thing before we pivot, Jesse, is that to the extent that marketing leadership has been kind of thumping their chest about lead volume and what they can do, they put themselves in this box. Because off the record, many a conversation that I have of people we don't work with and some that we do is, I understand, Kevin, but we're the lead department. And so if lead volume drops, by definition, everyone assumes we're not doing our job. Mm. Like, well, that's not true. Marketing can do everything right and not have the lead volume if the other parts aren't working. And even if you do, so that, what I mean by that is, and Andrew pings me now every now and then. He's like, hey, this person wants to do this thing, which
this was like all
the details of the things, but it's,
yeah,
they want us to do this, this, and this to create more leads. And we're like, yeah, but from the other 85 builders we work with, we know that those are all extremely low quality and or spam leads. Yeah, I know, but that's what they want. Okay. Why do they want that? Because they know better. We know better. Everyone knows better. Well, because they're getting pressure to create more leads. And mm-hmm. I've had lots of conversations this past week, even with other organizations that aren't home builders who work with home builders, who are like, we don't understand what's going on? Like, marketing leaders need to step up is what needs to be going on. You need to have these conversations with the data, tell a better story. All right, Jesse, benchmarks.
Sweet.
Oh, benchmarks just came out yesterday. So this is a good time for us to be on here.
Yeah, and you
so,
can share your screen for the YouTube folks.
Yeah, I'd love to
actually see what you're talking about too, if you want.
Okay, let me do it. All right, benchmarks came out. You know, we do these every quarter and then yearly. And Amanda on our team put together this data comparing quarter one of last year to quarter one of this year. And what's been interesting is it's pretty much similar. Even though the year started off very similar, we saw kind of a, what we've been talking about this whole time, Kevin, is kind of a decrease towards the last month of the first quarter. But conversion rates didn't really change a whole lot. So it went down 1% in lead to appointment kept, up 2% in appointment to sale, and up 1% in overall company contribution. You know, and that I think has a lot to do with one, the market, everybody kind of understands what's going on, but in the top end, maybe there was a decrease because objections, people are, the fear is coming in and people haven't had to do all of the things to get that commitment. But then once they get them to come in, they're more committed to converting to a sale. And then of course, online contribution has stayed in the 45, you know, it was in the 50, but we've got the walk-in traffic, we've got the realtor relationships happening. So kind of same quarter to quarter, year over year.
Yeah, so it is pretty flat. What's crazy is that feels like stability, which I think is kind of
well. What's been really interesting, I didn't want to say this like on the record, but
saying it now.
I know, but you can cut it out. When I've looked at builders that we work with directly, like on coaching calls, comparing quarter one to quarter two, quarter one of this year has been better on every single one that I've cross-referenced. Like,
wow.
Which was surprising to me. I'm like, okay.
Horn there. Well, that, I mean, that's
not that I work with, just we like different.
That should be, I was giving you a hard time. Yeah. That should be the case.
Yeah.
Right. As far as like training, getting better at your job, like over time, those numbers should, relative to the market, should increase, should be increasing if the right person's in the right seat.
I know.
Did you solve all the problems, Kevin? You solved them all.
I don't even want to talk about it. But so here,
not good.
There's three ladies from high school coming over for some lady who set up a self-tanning booth in our garage.
What is happening?
There's a gala this weekend for the high school students. And so someone rang the doorbell, and my 104-year-old grandma, who's not supposed to get out of her chair without help, let her in. So I was like, Grandma, if someone else comes to the door, I'll get it. Don't you worry about it. She's like, oh, okay. Are you upstairs? I said, yeah, I'm upstairs, which she just forgets. Anyway.
That's amazing. Big event this weekend. Got to get the tan on. Make sure you exfoliate beforehand.
Right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
So I think to me on the benchmarks, most exciting thing is that appointment to sale is still hanging right around the 20% mark, which is really good. Like because it would concern me actually more if that ratio was higher, because it would mean that we're probably sending out way less leads for appointments. So, and that jives with everything that we've been seeing in the data. Most people are not struggling in any portion of the funnel really, except for appointment to sale. And so 20% is a great place to be.
Do we have that data? This is a project for Amanda. I think it'd be cool if we wanted to release it, maybe at the summit, that'd be good to release it at. Oh, there we go. It's just not on that one. Looking at like when interest rates were at their peak, what these numbers were. I like time frames, like looking at the graphs go up and down, like pretty little numbers.
We're pretty close to peak right now. So
it's interesting to see that.
I think it was right around 8 was the high mark, right? And we're at 7.5-ish.
Yeah.
As a normal street rate. So, but I think the other thing in terms of lead volume, just remember, I posted this on my Instagram stories this morning. Something like two thirds or three quarters of Americans can no longer afford the average home in America. That might have something. The recency bias of like, are we really trying to chase lead volumes from 2021 in a quote unquote normal year?
Oh gosh.
With elevated interest rates, is that really where we're going to spend our time?
So. What's been cool too to see is kind of circling back to the story time, I didn't mean to do this, but when we look at the convertible leads, what we've seen is an increase in age leads converting because the buyer's cycle time is longer. So all of the appointments that they're setting from leads that marketing paid for 6 months ago, a year ago, have already had that time to make those decisions, weigh their options, and now it's go time when there's an inventory home and an incentive and all of the stars start to align. So I'm not surprised by the 20%, but it is from aged.
Yeah. And those offering interest rate incentives, it's kind of not a bad thing that interest rates are staying where they are either. Mm-hmm. Interestingly too, existing home inventory continues to increase. I think this past week was the largest single week increase in many years of used homes on the market. The used homes aren't selling though. That's an interesting thing. Normally those numbers were, they were expected when more homes came on the market, sales would increase kind of in line. It's not what's happening. Next up, Conspiracy Corner with Kevin Oakley from Fast Company.
Ooh, I like it.
AI is making Meta's apps basically unusable. The intended and unintended generative AI flooding Facebook and Instagram is a giant problem. So says many news organizations. Here's what I think is interesting about this and why I say Conspiracy Corner is, have you all interacted with Meta's AI?
I messed around with the Instagram search a little bit ago.
Yeah, on accident I did.
Yeah, so that's what they're complaining about. First of all, the amount of complaints around anything that changes around Meta's apps is proof how much people use them, number one, and number two, how much people hate change. But the way that Meta decided to integrate their free AI service called Llama 3, open source, is to put it in the search box of all of their apps, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, Messenger. It's not like, if you just try to do a normal search in Instagram in particular, they did a really good job, I think. If you're looking for a person's name, it still shows you profiles that match it. If you just type in a word, it still assumes you want to search for that word on Instagram. But all of these news articles are talking about how this is just completely ridiculous and Meta's trying to like destroy themselves by having AI added in. And I think it's exactly the opposite, because anyone who's got a paid version of ChatGPT that's not using an enterprise edition where you're loading up your own data, from your companies to be used, there's really no reason. Like every high school student, college student is going to say, I'll save that $20 or whatever it is and use the one that's built in. Cause you can do image generation. You can, everything you can do in ChatGPT, basically, you can do with Llama 3. And now it's freely accessible everywhere all the time. So I just think it's a little bit of a, either advertisers or even news organizations are like, no, we don't want you searching for news or getting information. We want you to get traffic to our site. It's just weird how like all these things are talking about how it's completely made the apps unusable.
Yeah, I think they did a few different things. There's this search on, which if you're on Instagram and you type in, do you convert? It doesn't use AI to search. Like it just does mm-hmm. normal search function.
Right.
You have to click the little spinning blue, purpley, whatever that's called. I have an idea. And then it opens up, like then you search again in there. So probably most people don't even realize that's there because it's on the left side of the search box. What I do with it, it's like, oh, that happens. But yeah, I would say like there's like the generative AI in pictures, video, like, maybe they're leaning more on that for the headline. It was just a terrible headline. I have no idea, but I've definitely seen that in the wild where it's like, that's not real. Like we could tell probably all of us here be like, that's not real. But then others are like, oh, what the heck is going on there? You're like, it's not real. It's not real.
All the news outlets are talking about how they're just obsessed with it. How are consumers going to know what's true or not? If it's not published in Fast Company, how are they supposed to know they can trust it? To which we all would say, sorry, Fast Company and Forbes and everything else. I saw someone tweeted, they said, I'm going to MKBHD is like the tech reviewer on YouTube. And there's a big old to do because he panned an AI pin and said it was like the worst product he's ever reviewed. And he was getting blamed as single-handedly taking down the company. That's how much influence he has on technology. And so someone said, I'm going to become the MKBHD except for with software, and I'll be taking payments for good reviews, $25,000 a piece. And then he said, oh, wait, that already exists and it's called Forbes.
Ooh, burn. Agreed. So, yeah, those AI pens got destroyed once they made it out to the world, like rightfully so.
Both Humane AI and Rabbit, both of those terrible in their current state.
It's like worse than a.
We're talking an hour and a half to 2 hours of battery life. Can you imagine having to? You're like, the idea is you're going to carry around this thing that's not your phone, but it takes like 45 minutes to charge and only lasts for two to three hours tops.
Garbage. Right.
It's like, who?
No way. Embarrassing. No way. All right, we're going to zip through because we got a lot of stories I want to look at. The second, this is an article from Datos.live. Not familiar with this particular publication, but they got some good data that I like. And the headline is predicted 25% drop in search volume is what happened. I think it was Gartner. Yeah. They predicted that by 2026, there'd be a 25% decline in search volume because everyone's just going to go to AI for all of their searches. And there has been some decline in overall search volume from Google. I'm just trying to summarize kind of, but the novelty factor, it's basically going to come back, is more or less what this article is arguing. Mm-hmm. So this shows at over 120-day period, someone who uses Google for searching activity or around services and products, their usage of it over the 120 days versus someone who's exposed to AI here and the proverbial cliff that they fall off of. And so they talk about basically that it's a novelty factor. Just like basically VR and AR, you're like, this is so cool. This is amazing. Like, I can't believe I'm experiencing the Grand Canyon from my living room couch. And then 4 days later, you're like, I don't want to put that on.
No.
Yeah, it's been dead for 2 days. I don't know. Where's the charger at? I don't even know. I lost one of the handle things, all the remotes. Yeah, and what's interesting is I look at this, and this is I just can't help myself. I'm like, well, is that search drop because of AI? Or because, to me at least, I found a habit of restaurants or anything food local like that, I'm like finding Instagram is much better, like for searching that, like St. Pete Coffee, Tampa Coffee, whatever it may be, versus because I want the pictures. I want like, I know what I'm looking for. I'm like, oh, that looks like a legit cup of local coffee that has a little design in it or whatever. And like, that's what I'm looking for. Cool. I'm going to go there because of that versus going to the website, which might not be that great because it's harder to keep update compared to their Instagram account, whatever it may be. And the change is so small, like who's to say with like, say Google's drop in the search volume from what's it 91.5 to 90.7. That behavior could be an influential factor in that. Or is it AI using AI instead? Don't know.
Yeah. I think the main takeaway here is that AI is not likely to replace search engine traffic. It's going to be integrated into it. So Google has the largest lead. They're going to use, and we've talked about this before, they're going to have to use AI's tools to fight misinformation caused by AI tools. So it's AI is not the new SEO. It doesn't appear. Next up from Builder Online, 3/4 of households are priced out of the housing market, like I was just talking about. So it is 3/4 of people already cannot afford the median priced home. And for a $1,000 increase, an additional 106 households will not be able to afford the home, according to NAHB.
Wow.
And so this means we have to do a couple things. Certainly lobbying is going to be important to continue to do to try to reduce zoning and impact fees and things like that are artificially inflating. But that requires governments to be reasonable, which isn't a reasonable thing to expect. So continue talking about it all you want. That's not where I'm going. I think we're going to continue to see smaller and smaller homes, different kinds of homes, and a push to create more new home communities like the Villages, like the Woodlands, where basically we're going to start building new towns that for at least a while will be able to be kind of self-contained. And I heard a comment from someone who's at a conference in Houston. I don't know what it was about land development, but they said basically like the great thing about Houston is we're still allowed to build homes here. Like there are rules, but it's still like achievable to build a house. Long live Houston, Texas. It was pretty funny to read that one. And then the last one, I guess we're going to focus a little bit more on Meta here this week. Meta's set it and forget it AI ad tools are misfiring and blowing through cash.
What?
Yeah, advertisers report that cost per impression. Right. Are you feigning shock there, Andrew?
No, it's crashing. Unlike the Tesla. It's not crashing into the pole.
The whole idea here, you can read the link to see the full article, but for the sake of time, because we want to get to love and hate before I run out of time here, is all of these things suck. All of them. From everyone. And what I mean by suck is, think about it. You're saying, don't worry, let us do all the work. We've got AI. And we're going to give you data that proves how great it's working. But just like I watched MKBHD, he took the rabbit AI device and he took a picture of a plant and he said, what plant is this? And it goes on describing that it's all this plant and the features of it and the glossy leaves, whatever. And then he spins it over and it's got the label from IKEA and it's like a completely different plant. So yes, it's giving you metrics. Right. It's giving you data. It's telling you something happened. But again, this separation of sales and marketing means that marketers who use, like the very marketers who are most likely to use this are also the most likely to not really care about the quality of the quote unquote leads and traffic they're creating. Because you care about it so little that you just want to push a little button that says, do it all for me.
Yep.
Same with Google. I would say the same.
So yeah, they're all in the same boat.
AI, machine learning, like when we know what works, Google's easier. Like we sell new homes in San Antonio. What do we think the best keyword is? New home San Antonio. With Facebook, like we need to be the ones writing the ad copy and choosing how it runs, what it looks like. We need to choose all that because we know what people are looking for. Like the AI could, it uses numbers. Like numbers are important. We established that. You need to know numbers to be comfortable with them. But like, if we already know it works, we know what people are looking for. We could talk to 50 potential home buyers. Like, what is the most important feature of a home? The kitchen, the whatever it may be. But we should probably talk about that. We should probably have images of that, great images of that. Not let Facebook decide that, you know, everyone really likes this walk-in closet downstairs. Like, no, don't do that. Whatever decision they make.
Yeah, engagement doesn't mean forward progress necessarily.
Yeah, I was reading something in ProBuilder yesterday about Gen Z owners. Only 18% of Gen Zs own a house, and there's 68 million people in that demographic, and over 50% of them still live at home. And so they surveyed them to say, what do you want in your home? And I think it shocked everybody. Like, Mom, AI wouldn't be able to guess that. Of course, they want smaller homes for affordability. So I guess, but what you were talking about, but they don't care about the kitchen anymore. And they don't care about hosting. They don't care about having people come over and do things in their house, their backyard, that outdoor space is more important. And just a nicer kitchen, but not a bigger kitchen.
Yeah. See, that's fascinating. Cause I've been on that standpoint for a long time, Jesse, of developers and, you know, senior leaders that I've worked with have always said what, you know, maximize the footprint of the house on the home site. That's what people want. Cause they want, and I'm like, no, actually my experience has been that in suburban and exurban situations, people actually would like to have more yard and be okay trading off for a slightly smaller home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Anyway, that's just my own personal bias, but this whole, I mean, when you look at house right next to each other, there's no differentiation really, or there's not as much differentiation between that and any other roof over your head. You know, the ability to have yard is a big part of it.
Yeah. Or your parents' roof, apparently.
Yeah. Or your parents' roof. Yeah, exactly. All right.
What's interesting,
Let's wrap up with what do we love and or hate this week?
Ooh.
Consumer product, movie. I'll toss out Delta just upgraded my flight to the Builder 100 to first class. That was nice. Thank you, Delta. Hey, I'll take back.
I love
20% of all the terrible things I've said about you by just jacking up prices to ridiculous levels.
That's funny.
The other thing that I have written down here is I just got off a 1-hour conversation with some of Zonda's senior leadership, and they kind of previewed for me what's coming over the next couple months that they're working on. And there is some really cool announcements and upgraded features that they're going to be unveiling over the next couple months, both to their livable platform as well as some of their visualization tools and just tools that builders desperately need that'll be driven by data. And so I'm excited for that. And just always for anyone listening, I always love, I don't need to know trade secrets and things that you don't want anyone else to know, but you might be surprised to know that I don't have the ability to just spend hours of my life looking at every company, what they're doing. So if you want to proactively tell me what's on your roadmap and what you're thinking about and what you're doing, that always helps. So thanks for doing that.
I don't know. Mine's totally random, maybe because I ate some for lunch, but I have to give a shout out to Nerds Clusters, the blue bag. They're the best.
That's an ask. What color bag?
Oh, blue? Really? I'm more of a red bag guy.
The
myself.
Blue. I'm not blue. I'm blue bag. I'm blue bag.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw somebody post that if you eat those instead of like all those energy things when you run, it does the same thing. So you can eat candy or you can spend a bunch of money on those goos. So shout out to Nerds Clusters. And
Wallaby, I just saw, I think it's Wallaby, right? The licorice people from Australia, Australian licorice.
I don't know.
Yeah, Willy Wallaby. Really good licorice. Because you all know whenever I fly home from a trip, I grab a thing. But they just came out with, I'm excited to try it next time. It's like a 1 gram or some low calorie, low sugar version of Willy Wallaby licorice. Oh. Which now means I don't have to, you know, probably like 35% of the time now I take a picture because of, you know, tradition of something gummy related, but then I don't actually buy it because I'm trying not to eat ridiculous amounts of sugar anymore.
And be careful with that.
Sugar's but good. Now I don't have to because they've got this low sugar, low calorie version. So
whatever your 104-year-old grandmother's doing, sugar-wise, I think that's probably safe. You're like, she has a pack of cigarettes a day.
Sneaks candy like a kid. Yeah, that's one of the things on the list. It's like, watch her. She'll just sneak into the pantry and eat all the chocolate she can.
You know, it keeps your pancreas working, insulin. It's good. Like, you got to keep doing that. I'll talk about some candy. They're hard to find. Jelly Belly gummies. They're bigger. They're like the size of like, I don't even know, like almost a grape, but they're Jelly Belly. So like, I think they have jelly beans, I think, are the best tasting candy in terms of like this, the actual taste. There's other candy I much prefer as far as like sour candy all day long, Starburst, Skittles, the Nerds Clusters, but like taste wise, Jelly Belly, these are really good. My wife hates them. She's like, they're disgusting. I think they're amazing. I could eat a whole bag in like 10 seconds. There's that. And then I have I just broke it out today. The Ninja Creamy. Have you heard of that, Jesse?
I've heard of it.
Creamy.
Creamy.
C-R-E-A-M-I. Okay.
Yeah. So it has, essentially you freeze whatever you want. Most people do, they get like the Fairlife protein shakes or Fairlife milk. Then you freeze it. You add, you know, some type of sweetener if you want in there, like banana, whatever. You freeze it. And then the blade in it kind of aerates it. So then it is creamy. There's different settings. So you can then make homemade protein ice cream.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is 400 calories. And it's like this giant bowl of stuff. And you're like, okay, that's not bad. Because Ben and Jerry's, they'd be like 1500 calories. Mm-hmm. So I haven't used it in months. Like, I should probably do that because I could eat some food late at night. Like, I could pound some food down. It's really bad. It's a bad habit I have. So I'm like, let me try this out. So I made a couple of creamies to have later. They might be terrible. I don't know. I forgot how to do it.
We're gonna need photos on Instagram later.
I'll throw some photos up. Like. It might be like, where's ice cream?
Can you mix in some of those Jelly Belly things in the ice cream?
Ooh, that would be, I need like a vanilla base, I guess, like a raspberry fruity base. There's some candy in there.
It's called Bears on a Cloud. Where I went to college, they had Bears on a Cloud.
Is that like gummy bears and ice cream?
Don't put them in and then like chop them up.
That's the only thing on it.
Make the cream first and then put the Jelly Bellies on top.
Yeah, you could.
I have one last one.
Ooh,
so we don't forget about our moms on Mother's Day.
Is that next weekend? It's coming up soon.
Punk Post is awesome. I send them all the time, especially to like people that I get the pleasure of working with and just surprise them or send a birthday card or whatever. And it's super affordable and it's handwritten cards. Y'all know me. I'm like old lady. and you don't even have to get postage. You plug in everything you want them to write, the fonts, mm-hmm. the colors, you pick the front of the card, and it's like $8 and they're super cool and it wows yeah. everybody. So that's another favorite that I have right now.
That's as much as going to Target and buying card. A card and it's like $5.99, $8.99.
Yeah. Then your postage.
Yeah.
Then the time. And
all the
only thing I'll tell you is that they will, there. Whatever you type in that box, they will put on the card. I sent them to my daughters when they were at summer camp for 2 weeks, a couple of years ago, and they looked awesome. But for Sydney, at the end, it said love sad instead of dad.
Love sadly.
And so that's still like a family joke. Every once in a while, she'll be like, hey, sad, what's up?
I think that's 48 sad. Mother's Day gift days card ideas for any mom in your life. Oh, this is perfect.
Punk Post is a good one.
Yeah, don't send a digital card. Don't be lazy. Put the human-centered element into things.
Punk Post. Right.
Have someone else be your human. That's good.
Well, that'll do it for this week. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one? Or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.douyouconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peek, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.